You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. Student loans. They're the key for many to getting a college degree. But repaying those loans can become the proverbial albatross around the neck of millions of Americans. Consider this. Americans owe around $1.3 trillion in student loans. Nearly 5 million people are in default, and millions more are behind on their payments. Susan Dynarski is a professor of public policy, education, and economics at the University of Michigan, and she's an expert on financial aid for higher education. She recently testified in Washington before the U.S. Senate Committee on Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions. Susan Dynarski, welcome to Stateside.
I'm so pleased to be here.
What was the crux of your message to the senators?
The senators asked me to come and talk to them about how other countries deal with their student loan programs. The vast majority of students don't borrow that much for college. You know, $1.3 trillion sounds like a lot, but that's in part because we have a lot of people going to college, which is good. The typical student coming out of a place like the University of Michigan is borrowing about $30,000 in order to fund their BA. And people who drop out of college borrow more like $5,000 or so. Interestingly, it's the people who borrow that $5,000 who are most likely to default.
I read your testimony. That jumped out at me. Why is that?
Basically, the people who borrow just a bit, go to school just a bit, they go in not earning very much money. They tend to be non-traditional students. They're more likely to be going to community college. They're more likely to be going to a for-profit college. And we don't have much of a safety net in our country. If you come out of school and you got a little bit of debt and you got low earnings, things can go badly quite quickly.
And the kinds of life consequences people face from defaulting on student loans, that you can feel that your whole life, can't you?
Indeed. I mean, even with the small amount of borrowing, once the fees start to hit, if you fall behind, a small debt can snowball into a large debt. Far too quickly, I think. The regulations around this are too loose, I would say. But if you default, that affects your credit rating pretty much immediately, which can affect, of course, the cost of borrowing for a car, the cost of borrowing for a home. There are employers who check credit records and will not interview or hire people who have a blot on their record. There are landlords who do the same. And of course, there's the daily calls and harassment from student loan collectors. So all in all, it's not a pleasant experience, and I don't think it's one anyone's seeking out lightly.
And in this country, no matter how small the paycheck, the bills keep coming, don't they?
That's right. In the U.S., unlike in many other countries, the typical approach to student loan payment is that in the first 10 years after you leave school, you pay a fixed amount for your loan. This is called a mortgage-style payment in the sense that it's the same all the time. It's amortized over a certain number of years. And I and many others have argued that this is completely out of whack. The first years after college are when earnings are lowest and most volatile. We saw in the last recession, and we see consistently, in fact, that young workers are the ones that bear the brunt of any sort of economic shocks. They often are loosely attached to the labor force. Their hours get cut. They have intermittent and uncertain earnings, and this is the worst time possible for them to be paying back their loans.
What are other countries doing that's better than we are? How are they doing it?
So in Australia, students borrow about what they do in the U.S. for their university degrees. In England, they borrow far more. They borrow probably three times as much as they do in the U.S. In both countries, repayment flexes with people's earnings. So think of how we pay our payroll taxes. You know, we pay our Social Security contributions and our Medicaid. We pay that as a percentage of our paychecks. If we don't get paid in a given week, we don't pay our payroll taxes. And that is how student loans work in these countries. If you have your hours cut or if you lose your job, then you're not making any payments because you don't have a paycheck or you have a smaller paycheck. And it's that automatic elimination of the payment, which I think is critical to helping out the most economically insecure.
What about that time frame? And you had talked about here in this country, you got that 10-year period. Do they have a more flexible time period?
The U.S. has the shortest repayment period that I've come across in any country. So 20 years, 30 years. In Australia, there's no limit. It's basically, you know, if things go poorly, then you don't repay. And at some point, if you start making a good salary, then you do start to repay. Typically, people pay off within about 8 years in Australia because you can actually pay off faster with a good income-based repayment program because the people who do well then pay more. So people who get a law degree, for example, might be paying off in as few as 3 or 5 years. You know, the problem with our repayment system is that you both were punishing people who are doing poorly, and we're not actually letting people or automatically having people who do well pay more.
Susan, I've got to wonder, who is really benefiting from student loans? And here's a case in point. I know somebody whose $20,000 in loans became $30,000 over the 6 years it took him to get his PhD. That becomes a new principal balance, and it winds up being $60,000 paid back after 10 more years. So which means somebody out there is making $40,000 in interest profit off of this one brand new PhD. And you multiply that by people going to college and grad school all over this country. Who's making all that money?
Well, it used to be that the banks did, because our loan program was set up in such a way that that extra profit would go to the private sector. Since about 10 years ago, the federal government runs all of the student loans, and so any profit there might be actually gets plowed back into other student aid. Whether there is a profit depends on what the other interest rates are in the country. So certainly not all of the interest that gets paid back is profit. The government has to pay for funds. You know, the government sells bonds and we buy them at a certain interest rate. So that's the cost of borrowing for the government. But to the extent that there is a profit, it tends to go into paying for other people who default or for paying for something like, say, Pell Grants.
Do other countries have governments lending to students?
Indeed. In fact, it's the norm across the world. It used to be that not many people went to college, and so the approach for funding for those few who did was free tuition and maybe even a scholarship and a stipend. So across Europe, that was the model. And then we had an explosion in college attendance, and rather than continue that model, most countries have introduced some form of student loans, paired with a subsidized tuition, but some sort of borrowing. So what's typical across the world is some sort of borrowing. What's not at all typical across the world is the disastrous level of default and financial distress that we see in the U.S. And that's why I think it's important to look to other countries for solutions.
So in this examination of our system for repaying student loans in this country, what are the politics in all of this? I mean, I'm wondering how open you felt the senators were to your message of how other countries have a more flexible, simpler way of letting people repay their student loans.
They seem quite interested in and open to the ideas. I mean, the best demonstration that something works is to see it working someplace. So that's why I wanted to bring in the international perspective. You know, it would be a new system to get off the ground, and I understand the concerns about the bureaucratic complications. We do have a good model, however. You know, we have payroll taxes, so we figured out a way for employers to figure out and calculate how much people should pay on an annual basis in their payroll taxes. So we're not starting from scratch. One complication on the Hill is that the committees that deal with something like payroll taxes and the committee that deals with student loans are different committees. And these they share jurisdiction. They would probably need to talk to each other and cooperate. And cooperation is not a thing that's in supply on Capitol Hill right now.
That is probably an understatement. If you could make it happen, you could wave some kind of a magic wand based on what you know is working in other countries. Take us ahead a few years after changes you believe could be made are in effect. What would the student loan repayment system look like in this country?
Well, people who have very low incomes would not be paying anything at all for their student loans. That's the approach in England and in Australia. So in Australia, if you're making less than, actually it's about $50,000 a year, you're not paying anything. Once you get above that, you start paying a percentage. 4% of your salary starts automatically coming out of your paycheck and heading off to your student loans. So we'd see people with low earnings not paying anything. Perhaps when they hit their 30s, they've been out of college for 10, 15 years, and they hit their stride, they might start paying at that point. We would not see any defaults. We would not see any loan collectors because basically the loans would be from the government and the payments would be to the government. Private banks, Navient, Sallie Mae, that now do servicing of student loans, they'd pretty much be out of a job at that point because there would be no longer any role for them. So there is political opposition by the loan servicers who get a lot of work and have a lot of employees as a result of the current system.
Susan Danarski, Professor of Public Policy, Education, and Economics at the University of Michigan. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.